Hello, welcome back to TL Talks Podcast. I am motherfucking TL in the flesh. It's good to talk to you guys again. Sorry about last week. As I said on Facebook, I attempted to schedule a couple of different guests for interviews and just didn't work out. It's just sometimes how it goes. If I'm having a busy week and it's kind of last minute, you know, somebody might commit and then not be able to follow through. And so that's just the podcast life. But anyways, here we are. So moving on. As you guys know, we always start with TL's thought of the day. Today's thought of the day kind of pertains to my guest this week, who is Coach Ernest Dukes from the Arkansas Wildcats. He's a guy that I've been looking forward to interviewing for a while because what he was able to accomplish with his team a few years ago that I was fortunate enough to witness in person is one of the greatest things I've ever seen in football, to be honest with you, in my entire life. And so he's an awesome dude, awesome coach. And my thought of the day has to do with human will. So humans are amazing creatures that are capable of awesome things and also very bad things. And so the way I look at it, I try to look at things positive, right? So people are capable of really evil things. The thing that sticks out in my mind right now is bullying. I talked to with a female friend the other night, and she told me about how she has a son who's in like middle school, and he's getting bullied by some kids in school, and she's basically just waiting for the school year to end so that he can go to a different school. And so stuff really sucks. Bullying is a big pet peeve of mine. I just don't like the concept of bullying as far as picking on somebody that, either can't defend themselves or can't defend themselves against you. It's just some of the lamest shit that I think a person can do. And so I don't tolerate that in my life. If I'm ever around bullying, I definitely will speak up and do something either physically or verbally. I try to keep it verbal, unless it has to be physical, but I don't tolerate that shit at all. Bullying is a really serious problem. It can lead to depression. It can lead to kids killing themselves. Just a lot of sad stuff, man. And so I don't want this to be negative, but I saw on social media today, they were talking about how there's this kid who's getting bullied at school. And I guess there's a video that kind of went viral of him telling, I think, his parents that he wanted to kill himself or he didn't want to be alive. And then there's this other guy who was, I think, a comedian who also was like, a short person, and he heard about it. And so he raised like he had like a fundraiser where he raised like 25 or 30K. For this kid to go to Disneyland, which is a cool gesture. My feedback for that would be the guy's the comedian's, his heart's in the right place, and I definitely support doing anything kind for anybody. I don't think you ever regret that, but that's definitely not going to fix the problem. This kid having a trip to Disneyland is going to make him, happy for a day, or maybe a week or a month or leading up to that, but it's not going to change his life. It's not going to change where he goes to school or what bullies he's dealing with just the things that he's dealing with day to day. And so, I don't know, I'm a little bit torn on that because I on one hand, I can appreciate the comedian doing something nice for a kid that literally doesn't want to be alive. But in the same token, I know that it's not a fix, right? The kid still has to deal with some stuff that's pretty brutal in his personal life. Those things aren't going to go away because he gets a free trip to Disney World. So there's that. That's the ugly side. That's one example of the ugly side of people. More importantly, I like to focus on positive things. So more importantly, what people are capable of, just human will in general, is such a strong thing. People are capable of amazing things. Most people are capable of more than what they think they're capable of. And so I see it time and time again in my life, how much people are capable of and how many people sell themselves short and don't even try something. I'm guilty of it myself. They literally talk themselves out of something before they even try it. And so I guess my takeaway for that is just that the guest this week, Coach Dukes from Arkansas, when you hear his story of him and his team, it's going to really give you perspective on what a team is capable of doing against all odds. So that's a really good takeaway. But my takeaway from me to you would just be, just like my answer for, you know, how to start something, how to start losing weight, or, you know, how to start a podcast, or how to pursue a life, you know, goal or a passion. The answer is in the question, to start. That's all you have to do is just start. And I think it's the same thing with, you know, I just said, like, some people will talk themselves out of things before they even try it. And so that's really sad, because we're really selling ourselves short, and we're capable of so much more than what we're doing. And so, you know, you can't do shit about yesterday. You can't do anything about your childhood or what happened years ago, but you can do something about today, and you definitely can do something about the future. And so, as the saying goes, tomorrow is the first day of the rest of your life. And it sounds cheesy and cliche, but it's true. And that's the only thing you can ever control, is the day that you have. And so I would just encourage you guys to try things. Don't talk yourself out of anything before you at least try it. You could be almost certain that you're not going to succeed at something, but guess what? It's not a certainty unless you try it. And more importantly, not only you try it, but you give it all your all. You know what I mean? If you go in there half-assed and being negative and already telling yourself you're not going to succeed, then you kind of already defeated yourself before you even tried. You know what I mean? But if you go in there with an open mind, thinking you can do anything, then fucking watch out, because you can do anything. So that's my thought of the day. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Moving on to the Browns and then a Denver Bandits update before I get into my guest. So since I last talked to you guys, the things that have happened in the news, let me try to be in order here. So recently, I'm not sure which one happened first, but thankfully Myles Garrett was reinstated to the NFL. And so he met with the commissioner about a week ago. The next day they announced he was reinstated, and he reiterated to the media that Mason Rudolph had said a racial slur to him. And so that's kind of the thing going around now. You know, it's Mason Rudolph denying it and Steelers coach denying it, and Myles Garrett sticking to his guns. So for me, my take on that is I think that Myles Garrett heard what he heard. I think that it is possible that the NFL is hiding, conveniently hiding some audio. But if that's what they're doing, then it is what it is. It's never going to get out. If the NFL doesn't want it to get out, it's not going to get out. And so if I was Myles Garrett, I would just kind of let bygones be bygones. You know, it's kind of a lost cause. The NFL doesn't want the audio to get out, so it's not going to get out. It's always going to be his word versus Mason's word. And so I just think he should move on with his life. I'm glad that he's reinstated. I was confident that he would be. So that's awesome that it's official now. He's going to be playing a full season this season. And I look for him to have a really good season. I think he's going to play very inspired is the word this season. So it's going to be fun to watch. Right around the same time, the Browns announced that they made four cuts. They cut T.J. Carey, who was a defensive back, Demetrius Harris, who was a tight end, Eric Kush, who was offensive lineman, and Adarius Taylor, who I think played linebacker or D-end. So all four of those cuts I agree with. Those are all guys that I either were getting overpaid or were not really performing at a level that we really need to keep around. And so, in my opinion, with this new regime, they're 4-for-4. So that's off to a good start. The last thing I want to talk about with the Browns is not something I want to talk about, but it happens, so it is what it is. Greg Robinson, who played left tackle for us last year, he got arrested, I think in Texas, around the border, because he had like an obscene amount of marijuana with him trying to cross the border or by the border. I don't know. I don't know the whole story. But the whole thing is just stupid to me. I mean, it's just Greg Robinson does not seem like a very smart guy. He's been an underachiever in the NFL ever since he got drafted. I was hoping that he could kind of revamp his career in Cleveland, you know. But, you know, he hasn't been a great player for us on the field. And this is kind of the last straw. Because, to be honest with you, going into next season, he wasn't going to be – at best, he was going to be a backup lineman for us. So it wasn't like he was our starting left tackle that we're losing. He basically just was going to be a backup at best, even if he's on the team. And so he's obviously not going to be on the team next year. He's facing up to 20 years in prison. Just a complete knucklehead, man. I mean, it's a sad story. I don't think the guy's necessarily a bad guy, but I just don't think he's very bright. And I think, you know, he took a big chance on trying to move some marijuana and got caught. And so I don't have much empathy for him because it was just really stupid. Like, why would you take that risk? You know what I mean? You're already making a lot of money in the NFL. Why would you try to do that? But I don't know. I mean, he's Greg Robinson and I'm some guy in Colorado, so I can't begin to understand anybody else. But anyways, that's my update for the Browns. We're getting closer to the draft, closer to us making moves with the rest of our roster. I'm interested to see what they do with players like Joe Schobert, who said he wants to stay in Cleveland, Rashard Higgins, and Kareem Hunt. Those are the three guys that are kind of at the top of my list. And David Njoku. I want to get, just for the record, let me put this out publicly. I want to get rid of David Njoku. I want to get rid of Rashard Higgins. I want to keep Schobert, and I definitely want to keep Kareem Hunt. And so, will I get my way? Probably not. I don't usually get my way with the Browns, but who knows? Maybe I'll get lucky and I will. I'm not a huge fan of Rashard Higgins. I think he has an ego that doesn't match his talent. And he, like this year, he didn't play much. And I remember reading something saying that he refused to play against the Seahawks or something like that. And so I think there's a lot of stuff behind the scenes that we didn't know about, which is why he didn't play much this year. And so I just think he let some stuff go to his head, and so it's probably better for him to move on, which is sad. You know, he developed into a good number three receiver, and he had a rapport with Baker Mayfield. But you know, if you're not a team first guy, you know, we don't really need that. So I'd move on from him. I would also move on from David Njoku. I've never been a big David Njoku fan. When we drafted him, I saw this, you know, big athletic guy that was muscle bound and looked like an athletic freak. But now that I've watched him, you know, since he's been drafted, he's been on my team every year, he just consistently underachieves, whether it be not blocking or dropping the ball or he can't catch in traffic. He just isn't good to be, you know, blunt about it. So I'm over him. Like, I would rather have, you know, one of our backup tight ends. I think his name's Carlson. I'd literally rather have him as our starting tight end than David Njoku. That's how fed up I am with him. So I get rid of him. I love Joe Schobert. Joe Schobert is an awesome linebacker. He's been with the Browns for a while now. He's a tackling machine. But the catch with him is I'm not sure what he's asking for. I'm not sure what his agent's asking for. If his agent is asking for money that he, you know, like let's say that his agent is asking for top three linebacker money, and let's say that Joe Schobert's a top 10 linebacker. Well, if you're not top three, you shouldn't ask for top three money. So what I'm hoping is that whatever they're asking for and whatever the Browns offer him, they can find somewhere in the middle to meet just to keep the guy because he's, you know, he's been loyal to the Browns. He has been an awesome player. He never causes any issues. He's awesome off the field, on the field. He's just a blue-collar guy, and he fits Cleveland. So I'm really hoping he's the guy I have the most anxiety about. I'm really hoping that we retain him because I think he's awesome. And then lastly, Kareem Hunt. I want to keep Kareem Hunt for obvious reasons. He is, like, in the top five in the NFL. For the running backs, are hardest to tackle. We saw that this year when he was able to play in the last – 8 games, you know, just having him and Nick Chubb was really fun to watch. But I don't know. With Kareem Hunt, I think I know he definitely wants to be in Cleveland. I know that he's appreciative that Cleveland gave him a chance. But then I read stuff once in a while that kind of makes me wonder. I read an article saying that Kareem Hunt said that it breaks his heart that he has to watch his old team, the Chiefs, playing the Super Bowl without him, which it's kind of half, you know, that's just human emotions. And then half like, how much do you want to be on the Browns? Then the other thing is, I think he was recently stopped for a traffic stop, and he ended up telling somebody or telling the cop that if they had tested him for being under the influence, he would have failed. So I think he was high. I think it would have been like marijuana, but I don't know. It's tough, man. Like, I live in Colorado where weed is legal, right? Weed's not legal in all states. And for professional athletes, it's really tough for me because it's easy for me to sit on my couch and judge a guy, you know, for what he does or doesn't do. But if I was in the NFL and I, you know, enjoyed smoking weed and it helped me, you know, help me with pain or help me focus or, you know, or just chilled me out, whatever the, you know, medicinal purpose for it was. And then I'm told that I can't do that because I'm in the NFL. That would be really tough. You know what I mean? And so I have a little bit of empathy for that. So I'm just not really sure where Kareem Hunt's at from a maturity standpoint. But I know he's an awesome athlete on the field. And so for obvious reasons, I want to retain him. I want to have as explosive an offense as we can have. And so that's why I want to keep him. So it's a little bit selfish on my, you know, from my perspective because I want to keep him for football reasons. But I'm not completely convinced that he's matured, you know, to where we want him to be. I think it still remains to be seen. So we'll see. Moving on to the Denver Bandits update before I get into my guest. So as you guys know, I coach a women's tackle football team here in Denver called the Denver Bandits who compete in the WNFC, which is the best women's tackle football league in America. And this team is going to have a really, really, really good second year. Last year was our first year. We went 2-4. We had a tough schedule. We had a rookie quarterback who learned a lot in her first year. It wasn't a great year, but it was a year where, you know, you kind of have to have that, right? You have to have a first year where you learn lessons, you learn what you did wrong. You might have low numbers, people playing both ways, just kind of the stuff that first-year teams go through. But now that we're past that, now we're in year two, I am blown away by where this team is at. As far as the coaching staff that Marcell Simpson has put together is phenomenal. The players that we've been able to recruit and retain is a nice mixture of, you know, veterans and first-year players. It's just a lot of talent, man. I feel like the only way that we can not have a successful season is if we mismanage these players. You know what I mean? If we coach them up like they should be coached up and get them to where they need to be in April, where they can play some good football, we're going to be a force to be reckoned with, and I can't wait. But that is the test, right? That's the challenge. How to get a group of women to go from in January – never played football before, to in April, ready to play a full tackle game. That's not easy. It's possible. It's not easy. So it's tough, man. We live in Colorado, so the weather sucks. We got spoiled in January. January, the weather was really nice. It was really weird. It was really warm in January, and then now it's in February, and the weather's crap. It's like cold. It's under 30 degrees. It like will snow and then it'll get really cold and it'll become ice. Then it'll stay cold so the ice won't melt. So basically the past couple weeks we've been practicing on, you know, fields that have snow and ice on them. Not ideal conditions. We've had players, you know, hurt their ankles and stuff like that, unfortunately. But the good news is there's been no serious injuries and we're still on pace. You know what I mean? I think that we're on pace right now to still still play really good football in April. We just have to stay on pace. You know what I mean? We have to keep lines of communication open with the coaching staff, make sure everybody's on the same page, make sure we're still developing these players, make sure they know the plays, make sure that we're making the most of our time in practice. And so I still do feel like we're on pace. We're not behind or ahead. And so I'm feeling pretty good about that. But yeah, I just actually had practice tonight and it was awesome. We're hitting more now. The offense showed some fight today and it felt like they punched back at the defense, which was nice to see. And so we're out there competing. It's awesome. It's football, 11v11. It's just best game in the world. So I love it. But yeah, that's my update for the Bandits. I can't wait. We have a preseason game in the end of March, and then our first game that counts will be in early April. I think it's April 4th, but that'll be in New Mexico against Las Cruces. And then after that, we have our first home game against Phoenix. So hopefully all you guys that live locally here in Colorado can come out and check out that first home game against Phoenix, the Phoenix Prowlers. I think it'll be in Aurora. And so hope to see you guys out there. But without further ado, my guest this week, as I stated earlier, is Coach Dukes from the Arkansas Wildcats. His name's Ernest Dukes. He is the head coach of the Arkansas Wildcats. He has coached them, I think he said, for about 6 or 7 years. But like I said, awesome dude, awesome coach. And the reason that I was so intrigued to interview him is because I got to watch him win a championship for the WFA in Division III in person. And it was literally one of the craziest, inspiring things I've ever seen as a football fan in my life. And I've watched a lot of football, so that's saying a lot. So, yeah, that is Ernest Duke. So it was fun to talk to him. Talked for about an hour. And it was cool to kind of dig in, you know what I mean, kind of pick his brain a little bit. So hopefully you guys enjoyed the interview as much as I did. So without further ado, here's my interview with Coach Ernest Dukes.
The former head coach of Arkansas Wildcats to my podcast, TL Talks. Coach, I know you're a busy guy. I tried to schedule you last week and it didn't work out, but I'm glad that you made some time for this week. So first of all, I appreciate you spending time to talk.
Okay, yeah, I appreciate it too, boss man. You got two twin girls now, so it's kind of a little, I take some time off of the family.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So, yeah, like I was telling you, one of the first things I tell my listeners is kind of how we know each other. Most of my guests are people that I've either talked to or met in real life a couple times. So if my memory serves me correctly, I think back when I was coaching my former team in the WFA, I've always been kind of a fan of the sport, and so I've always – made sure that I attended all the WFA championship weekends, whether it was in, Atlanta or Pittsburgh or wherever it's at.
Sure.
And I've been able to watch your team at least twice because of those trips. And so that was really cool. I reached out to you a while ago just to kind of, stay in touch. I know that I think I had one player from my former team that was in Arkansas temporarily. So I think she worked out with you a little bit.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah, so I appreciate that. But that's how we know each other originally, and then mm-hmm. stay in touch since then. But, yeah, man, the first thing I want you to tell my listeners is kind of a little bit about you. So I know a little bit about your team. I know that, you guys went to two Division III championships against the same team, Orlando Anarchy. I attended both of those games. I know that, what you guys were able to do on the football field, especially with, the low numbers you guys had,
is something
historic to me, man, which is why I was very intrigued to interview you. But I don't know much about you personally, man. I don't know if you're originally from Arkansas or what your background is, if you played football or how long you've been coaching. And so if you don't mind, just spoil us with as many details as you can.
No problem. Yeah, I've been I played football high school since junior high school. You know, played for Forest Heights. I played for Hall Central, you know, and when I was in school, went off to the military when I was 19. Played a lot of semi-pro ball in every state that I've done, you know, the Colorado Flames, the El Paso Rhinos, I think it was, and the South Carolina Titans and the South Carolina Columbia Flying Raiders. So, you know, I've been playing football for 30-some years, came back home from the military, started playing for the Arkansas Sabres, I think it was. I played for a few years. Played for them for about 5 years. You know, Father Time catches up with you. So, then couldn't do that no more. You know, the knees and all that stuff going out on you. And actually, my former coach was approached by the owner of the Arkansas Sabres, and he wanted him to coach the Arkansas Wildcats. And since I was coaching with him, he was like, "Yeah, I think this would be a great opportunity for you to." Coach, you know, women's football coach on the team. I said, "Bet, you know, I go out there, see what it's all about." You know, Coach Reynolds, me and him, real good friends. So I got out there, I checked it out, and the very first time I walked out there, I seen women that wanted and had a passion to do it. Yeah. And I was like, bad, you know, and, you know, I just kind of fell in love with it from then. You know, I've been always been loving football. I've been playing football for years.
Right.
You know, but, you know, just kind of loved it, fell in love with it. I seen the passion that the ladies had. You know, they take direction 20 times better than men do.
Yeah, they
and
do.
You know, it just went from there. You know, of course, we had our ups and downs, you know. Tried to do my best to transform the team into something I thought should be or how I think it should be. You know, took a couple of years off, you know, came back. Low numbers, and them ladies was just passionate about it. And finally found the right recipe, you know, a lot of great ladies that wanted to do it and wanted to be great in doing it. Finally did that, and we made it to a championship, won the championship. I most definitely was doing that for my former player, Kelsey Good, and the Good family. You know, Kelsey Good was one of our players that we dedicated to 2017 season, I think that was, when we won the championship.
Yeah.
And Kelsey Good was a player that when I first started coaching, she died in a car accident. It was raining real bad one night, and she died in a car accident. And so we dedicated that game to her, and, you know, we won it. And that was one thing I always promised her. I told her that I would bring a championship back to Arkansas, and, you know, and that's what happened. So,
yeah,
next year we made a run at it, you know, had a perfect season, and just lost the one that really matters. But, you know, try to come back to the year next year. You know, a lot of players, you know, so as coaches, you know, you want to get your players to the next level. You want to get your players playing on a team that's way 10 times better, you know, either go to Division II, Division III, or Division I. So some of the players decided they wanted to go to another team. You know, I wasn't mad about that. Loved every minute of it. They was a standout at their team. You know, one of my players made Rookie of the Year on one of those teams.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just, you know, that's pretty much my background, boss. I've been playing football for 30-some years, but I started coaching Arkansas Wildcats for the last 6 or 7 years. Uh-huh. You know, and just, you know, passion for it, you know, hard worker, try to instill the best qualities and the best things that I can in people, you know, that I'm dealing with, and just pretty much go from there.
Got you. Yeah, so like a lot of, you know, coaches in our sport, you play football your whole life just like me. And so you said you played, you know, pretty much your whole life, and then you played. Those teams you were listing off, were those semi-pro teams or arena?
Yeah, that was semi-pro teams, and one team was off in Colorado when I first joined the military. I was stationed in the Colorado Springs, Colorado.
Right.
They had a team out there called the Colorado Flames, and I played for them, you know. But, you know, like I said, I've been playing football for years, you know, boss, for years, so.
Gotcha. Yeah. So I guess my first question for you, Coach, would be, what position did you play when you were a player?
My main position was middle linebacker. When I was in high school, I played middle linebacker. Then I transitioned over to tight end. When I started playing semi-pro, I played a little bit of running back, a little bit of wherever they needed me, pretty much long snapper, punter, quarterback, you know, just wherever they needed me to play. You know, my dad always told me, you know, if you're going to play anything or do anything, you know, if you learn every position, you always have somewhere to play.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
Exactly. So I just pretty much, you know, learned all the positions and played. I didn't play it on the line. I didn't play, like I said, quarterback, fullback, tight end, tackle.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. I played every position you can imagine on the football field.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. Yeah, man, I was in the military as well, so we have that in common too. Before I moved, I was in the Navy for 4 years before I moved from Virginia to Colorado. And then within a year of me moving here is when I kind of stumbled upon women's law, and then, you know, the rest is history. So was that kind of the same thing for you, or were you coaching men before the women?
Yeah, I was coaching. I was helping my former coach, Coach Reynolds, with the Arkansas Sabres. I was actually coaching with him.
Okay.
And then kind of transition over to the Lace, you know, because they needed a coach, and they was like, you know, it'll be a good fit for you. I was like, all right, and I'll go out there and check them out. Right. But, you know, you have a set mind frame, you know, all these women trying to play some football, you know, and you go out there kind of biased, but then when you meet them, you see the passion that they have, you know, that bias go away, you know, real quick. And then you see the direction they take and how well they can, you know, take direction and just, because, you know, when women train, you know, they when women want, they try to do it to best, and they try to prove themselves.
Right.
So it was just, you know, kind of went from there. Even the player Hernandez, I think it was. Give her a shout out. You know, when she came down here, she was, oh my God, you know, hell of a defensive player. So.
Yeah, Chantel Hernandez.
Yes, Chantel Hernandez. That's her. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Gotcha.
Hell of a defensive player. So, yeah, I give her a shout out because, man, when I wanted to keep her.
Yeah, I don't blame you, man. She was a force for me when I was coaching her some years ago. I definitely agree with you there. So you played the middle linebacker, tight end, and a whole bunch of other positions in football yourself. Mm-hmm. You coached the men a little bit before you started with the women. My only question for that, when you coached men, is what were you coaching? What was your position with that men's team?
I was the defensive assistant coach and the assistant defensive coach. And after I stopped coaching the women for the little years that we took off, I started coaching this team called the Arkansas Wolverines. And I was the head coach for them also. So, got all about that.
And then when you started coaching the Wildcats, have you been their head coach all the years that they've existed?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And are you, I know, when I talked to the head coach of the Sin City Trojans in the WFA, mm-hmm. he's in a similar, you know, similar story as far as stumbling upon the sport and then being the head coach. But he also has always been kind of like the head coach and OC and had a separate guy calling the defense. So how is that structure for your team?
Yeah, that's how I was structured. I was the head coach. I was responsible for the offense. And then I had a coach, Chris Dyer, my brother-in-arms. You know, he was in the military also.
Yeah.
You know, he was the defensive head coach. So, you know, we just kind of did it from there, you know, going back and forth from there.
Yeah, so similar structure. Okay, got you. Yeah, man, so I was telling you before we started, one of the reasons I was really looking forward to interviewing you is because, you know, I've been involved in women's football, and I guess before I go into that, let me just say that I completely agree with you as far as not knowing what to expect. You know what I mean? Like, when I stumbled upon women's football and I was, you know, when I went to a meet and greet and then I went to a tryout, I had no idea what to expect. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know if there's going to be a whole bunch of women running into each other, it's going to be a joke, or it was going to be, I was going to be impressed. You know, I had no idea. I just was curious, basically. And then I went there, and I was blown away. Not only blown away by the athleticism that I saw and, you know, how capable these women were on day one, but also, like you said, I think I got a little bit spoiled as a coach because, you know, since most of my coaching career has been in women's football, I've had, you know, that fortunate experience of dealing with women that want to learn, right? And they make coaching easy. And with men, it's not as easy. And you can have headaches you don't need to have. And so it's an easy thing to fall in love with. You know what I mean?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, what I was going to get at was in the years that I've been involved in women's football, you know, I coached my former team for 4 years and then took a year off of coaching. And now I'm with a new team called the Denver Bandits that I'm really excited to be with. And we're this season, I can tell you a little bit about that, but the season's going to be really awesome, man. We've had great numbers, a lot of good talent, a lot of rookies. So obviously we need to develop and coach them up. But in the years that I've been involved in women's football, you may or may not know this, but I'm a little bit of a nerd. So I love football as much as you do, but I really dig into it. You know what I mean? Like,
yes, sir.
Before I got involved in women's football, you know, I was already obsessed with the NFL, right? And obsessed with my college team. And so I just live football in every aspect of my life. And so when I got involved in women's football, which unfortunately is not a part of our mainstream society in America yet, I was like, okay, this is this little hidden gem that a lot of people don't know about. So let me immerse myself in that, right? Let me educate myself so I know what I'm talking about. So if I'm talking to somebody about women's football, I can speak intelligently, right? So I just started nerding out, man. I started looking up, you know, the best teams, the best players. The WFA does a really good job of, you know, having a website that's functional where you can look up teams and, you know, you can get some stats. Not all the teams put up stats, but you can get some stats to try to see, you know, who the best players are and stuff like that. And so I kind of educated myself as well as I could. Well, the way that progresses into me and you, our paths crossing, is when I started getting involved in women's football, probably the third and fourth year was when my former team was in the WFA. I believe those are the 2 years that you were in the championship. So, you know, my team was in Division II. So we were trying to obviously work towards a championship in Division II. But since I was, you know, involved in the sport and pretty well informed, I also, you know, of course, kept tabs on Division I and Division III. And so I saw there's this team, Arkansas Wildcats, and they have a good record. You know, they're playing teams in D3 and blowing them out. They're playing teams in D2 or D1, and they're making it a game. You know what I'm saying? So just on paper, Arkansas Wildcats look really solid. But I'd never watched a play. The only thing that I knew, which will probably make you laugh, I don't even know, to be honest with you, it's been too long. I don't even know how I even, like, stumbled upon it. But somehow I caught wind of Kiara Vinson.
Oh, yes, sir.
Yeah. And she's a doozy, man. I don't know if somebody told me about a YouTube video or what happened, but I looked her up and I was like, golly, this girl. I mean, she's fast and she's elusive and, you know, I have all these, like, YouTube videos of her, you know, run away from people, like, with ease. And I'm like, she's a game breaker, man.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, so she's obviously playing for them. If they're winning this many games. And then I got to watch a little bit of film, and I saw, and so then it was kind of building up. I didn't have much to watch. I was just seeing scores, right? So I was seeing you guys were winning games. It didn't matter who you were playing. I knew you had Vincent, who's a really good running back, but outside of that, I didn't know much, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when I traveled to that WFA championship weekend, I said, okay, well, so here we go. We got Arkansas Wildcats against Orlando Anarchy, which would be interesting because I know the Anarchy are good. I know the Wildcats are good, but I've never seen either of them in person. So let's see, you know, kind of how they square up. So I watched that first game. And honestly, man, I don't mean to, like, you know, kiss your butt or anything, but that game and what you guys were able to accomplish, especially with the numbers that you had, is literally one of the most awesome things I've ever seen in my life on a football field. So when I went to that game, I don't know how many players you guys had. Maybe 15 or 16 players total.
Yeah, 12 players.
Yeah, actually, let me rephrase that. We had actually 11 and a half. One player was really bad. She was really hurt.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, dang. So that's not even thought.
He was actually just going in just to give people breathers, man. Because when I tell you, that game, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, we literally had about 11. We had 12 players when we won that championship.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. You literally never hear that. So I go to the game, and, you know, I get there a little early. So I'm watching you guys warm up. And I see Arkansas, and, you know, I see about, you know, about 10, 11 players out there on the field. I'm like, okay, well, you know, maybe these are their specialists. You know what I mean? The rest of the team hasn't come out yet.
Nah.
then I look at Orlando's side, and they got about double that, right? They're like somewhere in the 20s. I'm like, okay, well, Orlando's got – once I realized you guys didn't have any more players, that was all you had, I'm like, man, to be honest, I'm not even sure if Arkansas is going to be able to get through the game. You know what I mean? Because if you have a couple injuries, like, what are you going to do?
Yep.
So I'm watching this game super intrigued of how it's going to pan out. I'm like, man, Orlando looks like, you know, they're organized and well-coached. Arkansas looks like they're organized and well-coached, but Arkansas barely has enough to play. But obviously, you know, they're undefeated for a reason, so they know what they're doing. And so I was just really intrigued to see how the game was going to play out. But as you know, you guys beat Orlando, which is kind of like a David and Goliath type of thing. And you guys beat Orlando. They had double the players. How you got through the game was, you know, like you said, 12 players and 11 got to be on the field, which is just insane, man. So, first of all, before I ask you any questions, I just want to give you huge props, man. I know that it's a combined effort. You couldn't do it without the players. You couldn't do it without the other coaches. But the fact remains, Coach Dukes, you are the head guy. You know what I mean? This is your baby. This is you were the one thing that never changed, and you were the guy that was kind of the driving force behind that team that year. So regardless of what happens to you today or in the future, nobody can ever take that away from you, man. You know what I mean? Like, that was some historical stuff that I, to be honest with you, I'm honored that I even witnessed it. You know what I mean? Because it's one of them things you tell somebody and they're looking at you like, yeah, you're probably
lying.
Yeah, you're lying. You're probably exaggerating. I'm like, no, I'm really not, man. But like, it really happens. So it almost sounds like an old wives' tale. But, yeah, man, I just want to give you props for that.
Appreciate it, boss. I really do.
Yeah, so that I watched that in person, blew my mind. And then the next season, as you know, you guys got a rematch. So it was Arkansas versus Orlando again. When I was kind of keeping track of, you know, the scores and stuff from that next year, you guys obviously still got there. So obviously, you know, we're a good team. But I noticed a little bit of a difference in your guys' season the next season. So I'm not sure if it was like the scores weren't as decisive, right, or what it was, but I see a little bit of a difference. I wasn't sure what that was to attribute that to. And then I go to the game to watch the rematch of you in Orlando, and Orlando looks, you know, pretty much similar, but just with better numbers this time. You guys had a little bit better numbers the second time around, maybe 15 or 16 players.
Yeah, 19,
okay, yeah. That makes sense. And then in that game, they beat you guys. And then from there, I definitely want you to, you know, kind of clue my listeners in with the update with the Wildcats, because you said, you know, you're not sure what the future is going to hold. But I guess my first question for you, Coach, would be, the number one thing I wanted to pick your brain on, man, is how in the heck did you get these 12 women to win a championship in WFA? Because, first of all, it's a near miracle you guys even made it through the season. But for you guys to be able to execute and play both ways and be organized and be mentally tough, you know what I mean? Like, all that stuff is just crazy. So tell me about that, man. Is it your military background? Is it you're a personal trainer in your part-time? Like, these girls were well-oiled machines. So what would you attribute them to?
I'm going to contribute that to like all of it. Okay. You know, when you have women that was as dedicated as they were, you know, to put their bodies through what they put their bodies through, to endure all the training and the personal training I put them through, you know, all the grueling days and just, you know, and then players get injured and we don't know if we're going to have enough to even go to certain games. But even the Oregon trip, I didn't even know how we was going to get there.
Yeah.
And we did not have the money to get there, but we pulled together somehow to get and got there. You know, so I give it all up to, you know, their effort. Because they was on the football field. I can just tell them what to do.
Right.
Their effort that's going to push them through any type of game. So mm-hmm. I want to give kudos to every last one of my women on the Arkansas Wildcats that played and won that championship. Because they deserved every bit of it.
Right.
And, you know, so, but as a coach, knowing that you're coming into a season, you already know that you're short-numbered. And you know that you're finna have some ups and downs. It's I think it's one of the hardest things to have to be able to train and teach when you know that's what you're coming into. And
right.
to try to keep people safe and run plays that you're not trying to kill one person because, you know, Pierre was a hell of a back.
But,
so I was trying not to burn her out every game because I knew next week we're going to need her.
Right.
So, you know, for us to have a player like, you know, Charmaine and Latoya Bankhead-Sims and all my players, Gwen and Latoya and all of them, all them and Twin, I can go on and on about my team, you know, Mo and all of them that played that year. And just to have them, you know, see them in the locker room during halftime. See, a lot of people don't see that. And when that championship game and they in there taking off every piece of clothes, so they burning up, they hot, they tired. And I have to draw up plays to be like, okay, let me see how I got to end this. And knowing that, you know, they going to pass, they burning me out. And how do you kind of, it's kind of like a chess match, you know, how do you
– Yeah.
get your defense right and then this right. So we went, well, I just told them to go to base defense. You know, I told my defensive ends, rush the quarterbacks as hard as you can. Try to get to the quarterback as fast as you can. And like I said, 100% effort on the latest. They did their thing that game, man. They was, I don't think nobody said anything in the locker room because they was all too tired to say anything. So, and then, you know, for me to be able to, me and my coach Dyer, be able to put that stuff together in the locker room and we come out and they execute like they did, like I said. But we had one angel up in heaven that we prayed and we prayed to every game that to help us through this. And she was out for driving force that game. You know, mm-hmm. she was on that field with us pushing, enduring. Erica Williams, you know, the center that we had, and she's playing center and defensive tackle and, she was going through all type of health issues through the whole season, passing out, doing games. Man, I'm talking about just, oh, Lord. I tell you, that we went up to Oregon and God kind of just made that game win because, you know, the way that game ended, they didn't have the lights on and it got too dark and we was up, so they couldn't continue to play the game.
Oh,
and, yeah, so they called the game, and we was up, and they called it, and we won that game. So, you know, but for us to have to drive 38 hours to play a football game is a grueling task on itself.
Right.
Well, it's not a fun experience because you lean on good players more. You push players to their limits. You break them, and then you have to rebuild them, and then it's just – but. They have to be mentally tough, and that team that year was just mentally tough. They wanted to win a championship. They just wanted it. So
wanted it more.
Yeah. So I just give it up to the ladies. You know, there's a lot of things. You know, a lot of film watching on coaches and trying to make it as easy as possible for the ladies. But at the end of the day, you know, they executed my game plan and they won the game.
Yeah.
That's how that went. Yeah. Without them, you know, like I said, you know, no coach wins without players. You know,
right.
You don't even have no team without players, and And I just get that, you know, when any team that got players that want to win and have that desire to win and don't take anything personal and try to leave all the drama and all that stuff off the field, you're going to have a team that's going to win multiple years.
Yeah. Easier said than done, though, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, you said it. It's easier said than done, you know, because you know you're gonna have drama. We know it's women, you know, you're gonna have drama with men too, you know, and that's just how it goes, you know. Sports brings out drama, and you know you endure it. But you know, I never took nothing really personal. You know, I really tried not to. You know, I just tried to tell myself, you know, if I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do it to the best of my ability, and if I'm gonna do it to the best of my ability, I can't be taking anything personal. So, you know. And just kind of went from there.
I hear you, man. That's crazy. Yeah. So I love that you have a modest approach to answering that question. I'm a modest guy myself, and so I love that you give most of the credit to the players. But I am a coach, and you're a coach, so I have to pick your brain a little bit, man. So how would you say that you got your players ready? Because like you said, you had low numbers the whole season.
Mm-hmm.
You tried not to, you know, wear out your star players too much. It's a delicate balance. It's a chess match of trying to figure out how to game plan, how to get your players through the game physically. And then there's the off-the-field stuff, like how the hell are we going to get to Oregon? So how did you, as a head coach and OC, how did you do it, man? Like, was it a mixture of conditioning your team so well that them going two ways wasn't that big of a deal? Was it just mind over matter because the women wanted it that bad? Or like, how much of it was coaching and conditioning and stuff like that?
Yeah, it was a lot of conditioning. It was a lot of conditioning, you know. And you really pushing them to their limits. Like I said, boss, them ladies would come over my house. They had a little gym in my house, and they would come over my house. We all would put them through training here. You know, I would go through it. So, like I say, boss, it was pulling tasks and leaning on great players, leaning on players that, you know, even leaning on players that was not that good. You know, like you just really trying to be like, okay, you have to be able to motivate. You have to be able to let them know that, you know, you're here with them. You know, the grueling tasks, a lot of up night, long night studying. A lot of finding weaknesses in teams, a lot of, back and forth approach to coaching. You know, you have to know the team, and you got to know the people that you're playing against.
Right.
You know, and in that championship team, I broke Orlando's, you know, both seasons I did, but I just broke their defense and broke their offense down, and I game planned for it, and I pushed myself through it, and you know, a lot of nights, you know, up and wife telling me to come to bed, and I'm like, I'm coming, and you know, and just a lot of things going through your mind, you know, when you get to a point that you're gonna go play a game like that.
Yeah.
So you know, but you know, I'm always been that kind of type of coach. That my motto is: if you want change, you have to submit to the process of the change. So if you're gonna change anything, you're gonna have to submit to the grueling process of it, the training, the beating up your body, the going through the emotions, the emotional battle of doing all this other stuff, the financial burden that this female league puts on you.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not just, you know, physical, it's everything. These ladies, and it was a lot of emotional for me too, you know, dealing with, you know, trying to get players to, you know, pay extra money to go here and go there, and dealing with players that quit, you know, and you're already short numbered, and you don't like, damn, I really can't lose this way. You know, it's emotional grind, but it's also, like I said, boss, with that year, it was a lot of prayer. It was a lot of prayer. It was a lot of, you know, that year before I got saved, you know, like I said, a lot of cussing, a lot of things going through your mind, a lot of, should I even be doing this, and how the heck we going to finish this season, and how we going to do this, and how we going to do that. But, you know, I'm always, like you said, I'm always prepared. I always try to get myself prepared for everything.
Yeah.
So I don't like going into any situation unprepared.
Yeah.
So when it came down to that season, I knew what I had. I knew with the type of team that I had. I knew they could gruel it out. You know, because they just wanted it. You know, and I wanted it for them. I wanted it with them. And I tell you, the bumps and bruises and the days we have film session, they come to the house and we sitting in here and I'm just, okay, y'all, this is film session. We finna break this film down. I'm finna show you what we got to do. They taking all the information in. Mm-hmm. Like I said, boss, it's a lot of grueling tasks on, you know, opening your home up to players and stuff like that, you know, but it's motivating. You got to keep them motivated. You got to keep them dedicated to the cause. And like I said, that year, with them passing out on football fields, they just wanted it. You know, I could talk to them. I had players I would talk to, passed out, wake up on the sideline, and I'd be like, you ain't going back in. My team needs me. And I'm like, I can't put you back in. Your whole leg broke. I got to go back in.
Okay.
And so, like I said, when you have that type of dedication, that type of mind frame, nothing's going to beat you. And they was just grueling ready for it. Because I know when we went down to Arlington, Arlington was a great team. And they literally physically beat us down. And to have to go home and get prepared for the next game and heal up. And it was a grueling task, boss man. It was a grueling task. But like I said, I give it to the ladies because, man, when I tell you, that was just because we had better talent the next year. Won every game in the regular season, won every game in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But I think when we got that good, I think when we seen how good we are and then we started relying on the legs of Kiara,
yeah.
I told them, I said, that's going to get us in trouble. I was like, oh, we can't just rely. So during some games when I was passing the ball and people in the audience hollering, why are you passing the ball? Just give it to Kiara. I said, yeah, but we're going to get in the game that we're going to get in trouble. And we can't use her. We're going to have to be able to do these things. So,
right.
You know, because there's a lot of, you know, that championship year was a lot of times we didn't practice. There was a lot of times we didn't, you know, nobody even showed up to practice. Uh-huh. So, but like I said, is when you have a great back like you have that just can outrun everything on everywhere, you know, just a wholesome talent. You know, that's why I was telling her I didn't want to lean on her. But hell, you know, I can't take her talent away from her, though. When you can give her the ball and she can score, you don't expect that. You don't expect to give her the ball 20 times and she scores 20 times. So,
yeah.
You know, when it comes down to Kiara, just an awesome talent. You know, I give it all to her. She's like my little sister, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of ups and downs in her life, you know, but she came through it and God has blessed her throughout being blessed. I'm so happy for her now. So, you know, like I said, boss, I would love to coach again. It just, I got the heart, I got the spirit for it. You know, unfortunately, got extra kid now, so you gotta make it a little bit more difficult.
Right.
You know, but, you know, I'd love to bring this team back, and I would love for us to doggone come back and do it again. But, you know, I totally understand if they, you know, their mind frame if they don't want to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I got you. So, with that team that won the championship, before mm-hmm. I ask you about the follow-up year where you guys had the rematch with Orlando,
mm-hmm.
tell me a little bit about the years prior to the championship. So I know that for me as a coach, every year is different. You know, every year you have different coaches, different amount of players, different mm-hmm. dynamics on the team, different outcomes for the season as far as wins and losses. So how were those seasons before the championship for you as a coach with Arkansas?
Well, when I first started coaching the Arkansas Wildcats, we was playing out at Central High School, and I had an old player approach me. It was the team was warming up, and they was like, Coach, what you done did to these girls? They look totally different. And I was like, well, you know, when you bring it to something, you have to organize it. You know, you have to bring it to it, organize it, try to get them, you know, to be organized.
And
the first season, you know, the first season was no divisions. It was just WFA.
Yeah.
So you had to have good players on your team. And, you know, when we went down and played teams the first year, the very first year we had a very good season, a very great team, very good talent, very good everything. if we would have still had that team that we have that very first season, I would have never lost another game. I would have never lost another season. We probably would have been, Arkansas Wildcats would have probably been the Dallas Elite of the WFA Division III now. Yeah. So that team was awesome. It was awesome. But, you know, ups and downs, you know, and you know, you have ups and downs. And at that time, you know, you have personal issues going into it and a lot of things happening and a lot of, you know, emotions going through stuff and people hating on everybody and just, you know, drama. Pretty much just drama. Yep. And when that drama hit, you know, it's kind of just pulled the team apart. You know, the next season, you try to bring it back. You know, you still got the same drama going into the next season. You know, you're trying to, you know, get through the drama and the season, and it kind of breaks the whole thing down. You know, take a year off, you know, bring the team back. We brought the team back. Team was actually doing pretty good, but we canceled the season because one of my players almost died on the football field. Yeah, she got hit in the game and had a brain bleed. You know, with me having short numbers, I just didn't feel like it was worth the risk. You know, when you're sitting in the hotel room and she's laying up in a hospital bed,
right?
You know, fighting for her life, pretty much. You know, you have an epiphany about yourself. You'd be like, and that's the crazy part about that is. Now I'm going into another season with 12 players after going through all of that. So when I tell you the players, some of the players played on that season, you know?
Right.
So when you're going through that, when you have a player that break both ankles, you know, only play in two games, and, you know, it's really hard to try to bring back a team when you have so many injuries, you have so much drama into it. But, you know, like I said, that year that we won, I'm just glad that they put all that aside and we won that season.
Yeah. I'm with you, man. Before I talk about the rematch with Orlando, the one thing I want to mention to you is the cool thing about these interviews is I get to not only learn more about people that I didn't know, but also what I find, especially with coaches, I have a lot more in common with coaches than I originally, you know, knew about. So, like, in the instance of me and you, you know, we both were in the military. And then the second thing that you just mentioned was your preparation for games, right? So something that I pride myself on as a coach is that I'm always going to do the extra stuff behind the scenes, like film study, to make sure that my team's prepared. Yeah. So any team that I coach, especially if I have a, you know, a big title like head coach or a coordinator, that's kind of like my... you know, my stamp of what I put on a team is if I'm involved, that team's going to be prepared, at least mentally, right? Like physically, you know, players may or may not do what they're supposed to do to get themselves ready physically, but mentally, if I can do the extra film study for them to give them, you know, whether it be a game plan or weaknesses or strengths of another team, I don't mind doing that extra stuff. You know what? Even if it's me by myself watching film for 3 hours, you know, on a weeknight, you know, it's worth it. It's worth it for the team because those are the things that you need to have a championship team. So we have that in common, which is pretty cool. But yeah, my next question for you is a rematch with Orlando. So like you said, next year you guys win the championship. Next year you guys are undefeated. Everything seems great, and now we're going to have a rematch with Orlando. And you said that. The first time you won the championship, you had 12 players, and then the rematch, you had 19, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So 19 players in the rematch. Orlando had more players than the first time.
Yeah, they had about 20, 25, I think it was.
Yeah, so almost similar numbers, a little bit more. But tell me about that game and how it went and kind of why you think that you guys weren't able to repeat. Oh,
well, we didn't prepare. I'll tell you that now. We didn't prepare for the game. Two weeks, you know, it's 2 weeks. You know, we played the last game to get 2 weeks off for the championship game. We practiced once. And I think that, you know, and we're arguing over silly stuff. You know, stuff that doesn't even pertain to the game. You know, it was just wasn't the right mind frame. We didn't go into that game with the right mind frame. I put every play that Orlando ran on the whiteboard. Every single play. I studied every play that they did. Yeah, everything that they did, I knew what they was going to do.
Right.
Every single play. I'm talking about it. I probably used the whole 2 weeks to prepare for the championship game. I knew where people lined up. I knew who they were going to possibly throw it to.
Right.
We just didn't prepare for it. Call the practice, tell them that we have practice. You know, people out there arguing over silly stuff. And just, we did not prepare for the game. And God, you know, has a way of pulling you out your rafters, you know. He has a way of humbling you to the best of your his ability.
Yeah.
And I think it was, you know, and the crazy part about it is I don't think it was just for the team. I think it was for me also. Because even though, you know, I was prepared for it, I was neglecting a lot of stuff that I need to be doing at home. So, you know, because, you know, you neglect, you know, your wife, your kids, you neglect a lot of stuff that you need to be doing at home because you're so involved in this football and it takes so much of your time.
Right.
So, you know, once we won the championship, my wife, you know, I begged my wife, she'd be like, hey, let me coach again. Let me coach one more year. We can't just stop and we didn't win the championship. You know, Kimmy, come on. So she allowed me to do it, you know, but it's just a funny thing. You know, you win easily. You beat teams easily. You're going into a championship game with that same mind frame. You think you're going into a championship game like, we're going to run all over them. Right. They don't got nothing to stop us. And I told them, I said, they ain't worrying about nobody else but Kiki on this team. Kiel Benson, they ain't worrying about nobody else. They stop her, they stop us. So I was trying to call practices to let them know that we going to throw the ball. And we're going to use players that they don't know about. You know, we're going to use players that, you know, and when you out there putting in brand new plays an hour before the season, before the game started in the parking lot,
you
probably ain't
going again. Yeah. That's good. I've done it
before, man. It didn't turn out well. Yeah. So, you know, but like I said, boss, God has a way of humbling you. He has a way of pulling you down from your rafters. And I think I was the main one because, you know, it starts at the head. I don't blame the ladies for anything. It starts at the head. Because if I probably would have approached it a different way or said something different or, you know, try to do something different, maybe they would have came to practice, you know. You know, sometimes you do have to give it to players, but, you know, my philosophy is I don't blame players when things go wrong. It's just the coach's fault. And that's just how I've been taught, that's how I was always taught, you know. And, you know, even though, you know, as coaches we know that some players don't listen, some players want to do what they want to do, you know. You know, but you at the end of the day, it still falls on the head coach. You know, so with that, when I got to Atlanta, our mind frame wasn't ready. We weren't ready. We wasn't ready at all. It wasn't even a thought in my mind that we were. You know, the atmosphere in the locker room was different. So you know, when you go into big games like that, and you know, people. Then you have a big argument after the game because, you know, you didn't come all this way to lose.
Yeah.
You know, so, but, you know, at the end of the day, like I said, it's a humbling experience for me. It was a humbling experience for them. I hope everybody learned something from it, you know, but yeah, we weren't prepared for that game. We was not prepared for that game at all.
Gotcha.
That's about it.
Well, you know the saying, coaching only goes so far.
Oh, yeah, yes, sir. Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. You know, players still have to bring it. They still have to do what they need to do.
Yeah.
You know, you can coach somebody up. You can tell them, you know, but at the end of the day, we can't play the game home.
Yeah, so. That's right. As coaches, that's one of the toughest things about coaching for me is, you know, like you said, you spent two weeks preparing for Orlando. You knew exactly what they're going to do. You were completely prepared yourself, but the team wasn't prepared. And so from that standpoint, you know, you did what you needed to do to be a championship coach again, but your team didn't. And like you said, the thing that I liked the way you worded it, Coach, was you said that you just kind of default to saying it's the coach's fault. And I like that because what that means is that the way I look at it, man, there's two different mentalities in football. There's a excuse-making mentality, and there's the ownership mentality.
Oh, yes, sir.
championship teams have ownership mentalities, and that's exactly what you just exhibited. Having ownership and saying, not wanting to point the finger, right, or look for the easy way out or play the blame game, but just say, okay, it's on me. I'm the head coach. I can't make anybody do anything they don't want to do. But, you know, humbling yourself and saying, you know what, I probably could have done some things differently, right? And
yeah.
in the future, I know that for, you know, when I coach again. So that's a very, very good perspective to look at it that way. So my last question for you, Coach, is this coming season, you said that with Arkansas currently, it's very much up in the air about, you know, the future and if you guys will have a team and what your numbers are. So I don't mean to be too nosy, but how is that looking for this season and in the future from your perspective?
Well, you know, one thing that we've been always, you know, the lack of communication on our team is always been there. Okay. You know, and it's just like I call and text out and like, hey, can y'all think I want to come back in 2021 and we make a run for it again, you know, let me know. And you only get five players texting you back, you like, you kind of get more frustrated.
Yeah.
So you want to do it. You want to be like, man, come on, y'all, just give me, let's put all the bull crap aside and let's be the great team that I know we are.
Yeah.
You know, let's be the team that I know we can be.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I guess that's my mind frame because I like you said, you learn from your mistakes. And you're trying to, you know, bring a team back together, show them that you can learn from your mistakes, show them that, you know, hey, this is what we're going to do different. We're going to get this done. We're going to get that done. And then, you know, it's like, but, you know, people got lives. You know, people got lives, you know, and players, you know, some players just body's not, you can't do it no more. You got people that just got too old to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I guess my thing is the reason why I wanted to is because in Arkansas, it's not really a lot of strong leadership, you know, other than our Arkansas Razorbacks, you know. And then I like the fact that the Arkansas, you know, we became that driving factor, especially for women empowerment. So
yeah.
It was like I want to bring it back because of that, the women empowerment. You know, these women can get out and play sports and do what men can do, you know,
yeah.
And eventually, you know, have these ladies get paid for doing this.
Right.
Eventually have them, you know, get in a big lead because if you think about the WNBA, if these ladies would have never pushed for it, they would have never got it. You know, so, you know, I just want to be part of that legacy, I guess. You know, I just want to just show every other city that, you know, Arkansas got some stuff here. You know, we got the talent. We got the this. We got the that. So, you know, and I would love to come back. I would love to do it. You know, I would love to bring the team back. I told them, you know, hell, if I can't bring the team back, hell, I'd love to coach some other team. You know, I just want to coach. You know, it ain't who, you know, but I just know the talent that I got here, and I would love to coach in my team. You know, but at the end of the day, the passion for coaching is in. You know, I started coaching them. I started coaching my wife's bowling team at high school. You know, so I started helping out with a softball team. So, you know, whatever it is, that's what, you know, it's just a passion to want to see. Want to give all what's in you to somebody else and make them great.
Yeah.
You know, you want to see that, you know, that you help them on their journey. You help them on their path to get what they need to get. And
right.
I guess that's where I'm at right now. I wanna help kids. It doesn't really matter who it is. I'm on that point that's why I opened my own gym. That's why I went to go get my certification and everything, because at the end of the day, it shouldn't have to take you to get broke to try to be good. You shouldn't have to try to pay somebody an arm and a leg just to try to be, because you want excellence. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I try to be this force, and then, you know, I don't want to have people be, well, you know, I'm going here, but they all out for just money. You know,
mm-hmm.
I want to bring something back that makes somebody great. And if, you know, however I'm going to be able to do that, I just put it in God's hands and we move forward from there.
Got you.
So it's safe to say you guys won't be fielding a team this year.
Not this year,
right?
Not this year. I'm not sure about next year. You know, I would, like I said, boss, I would love to bring a team back. So I can't do nothing without players.
Right, right. I got you. So I wanted to ask you real quick before I let you go, Coach. What are your thoughts on the WFA and WNFC? Are you pretty well informed with those two leagues? Or
well, when I got called by OJ about the WNFC, and you know, she wanted us to go into that league, mm-hmm. you know. But at the end of the day, I knew what I had, and I was like, I don't barely got some numbers to pay, so I don't know if going into that league right now would be the best of our ability to do.
Right.
So the only reason why I didn't, if I had a solid 28 players, 30 players, I would have went into that league and leave.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, it's not for the coaches, it's for the ladies.
Yeah.
You know, we can do what we can do to help them heal the financial burden that they got to put on every year, then let's do it.
Yeah.
You know, because it's a huge, humongous financial burden for these players to have to be paying these fees and all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think she does something. I think she did something real good, you know, when it comes down to that. You know, so, and the WFA has been around for so long. That's what I've been knowing. That's what I have known. Right. You know, I'm not going to knock nobody's stuff that they're trying to do. If they're trying to be better, I'm not knocking it. I'm not knocking anybody.
For sure.
You know, you be better at what you got to do, because who am I to judge anybody? It's all the stuff I did wrong. So, you know,
right.
I can't judge nobody, you know. So I just want, you know, just hope and pray, you know, everybody do it for the right reasons, you know, and hope and pray that, you know, it does go somewhere and we can, you know, get some of these ladies actually getting paid to do what they love to do.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm with you, man. That's why I'm such a big advocate for the WNFC, because, you know, I'm sure OG's probably told you a little bit about it herself, but
mm-hmm.
you know, their whole business model and their vision for the future of women's football is exactly what you talked about. It's exactly, you know, it's taking away the financial burden. It's trying to eliminate player fees. It's trying to eventually pay the players and pay the coaches. It's just, mm-hmm. you know, it's much more a big picture mindset, in my opinion. And so that's why I'm really happy to be a part of it.
Yeah. But so the thing is, you know, if we weren't so selfish, you know, I might get beat up for saying it, but if we weren't so selfish, you know, the WFA and WNFC would just come together and just make a platform for everybody. You know, I think it'd be beneficial for every team to be in one league. You know, if I can bring this, you know, to help everybody, because everybody in it for women empowerment, then that's what we're going to do, you know.
Right.
It's not just about me, you know. It shouldn't be just about you, you know. It should be about trying to help everybody. And I think that if the day that they come, that the WFA and the WNFC come together, they might just pull out the biggest thing that they ever can see, because I think that'll be a great move.
I hear you. I wish that it was that simple, man.
Oh, yeah, you know, things are not simple. I already, you know that. You know, we know emotions run high and things go, and, you know, money situation, you know, drives a lot of stuff. So, you know, we know about that type of stuff. We was in the military. We know the politics. we know the politics,
man,
you know.
Yep. I hear you. So, yeah, man, last question I have for you before I let you go is there anything – because, you know, like I said, I have great admiration for the championship you guys were able to win, especially with the amount of players you had. And I know that you're saying that you guys did it in memory of the player that passed away. I know that you're saying that the women just wanted it more. And I know that you definitely spend the extra time to make sure your team's prepared mentally. But is there anything from a conditioning standpoint that you could pass on to me that you know, because I'm sure there's other coaches that listen to these, that was just like a little nugget that you could pass on to other coaches to help a team get physically prepared, because it was so obvious when I watched that game that your team was just on another level, you know, physically. So is there anything you would be willing to pass on as far as conditioning that you kind of just think is really, really valuable?
My thing is, I don't hide my techniques. When your player came down here and worked out with us, it wasn't like I was like you're not gonna, I ain't gonna show you everything I got.
Right.
No.
Yeah, yeah.
You're gonna work out with us, you're gonna work out with us. I'm gonna show you everything. I think that when it comes down to the conditioning, most definitely have a hell of a conditioning plan or have a conditioning thing. I do my studying, and, you know, since I'm a personal trainer.
Yeah.
You know, I have bought so much equipment, so much speed equipment, so many sleds, so much weight. And I try to do what I can do so, you know, because most gyms won't just let you go in there and work out.
Right.
So, you know, so what I do is I try to sacrifice everything that was in me to try to give back to them. Most definitely, you know, I just had them eating right, drinking plenty of fluids. We ran thousands of heels, thousands of steps, thousands of bleachers, thousands of sprint drills. We just, like I said, the conditioning was off the charts, you know.
Yeah.
And then many days, 2 hours, we out there working out, just 2 hours straight condition, you know. And then, you know, most definitely do it early. Most definitely do it early. Do not start 2 months before the season starts. The season we went 11-0 in the regular season and playoffs, I started them a month after they won the championship. We won the championship in July. They was training in August.
Yeah, 1 month off and you get back to it.
Mm-hmm. So August, September time frame, they was training and they was ready. Man, I had them on bear crawls. But the crazy part about it, I think it was because they knew they was champions, so they even came and they did it. They was focused harder because they knew they was champions.
Mm.
So I think, you know, when it comes down to that, just get you a good workout plan. Have your players train. Push them as hard as they can. Do not, never, every time they say, coach, I could do it, I can't. That was never in my vocabulary. I tell them that all the time. You never say no, and you never say I can't. Because no and I can't mean I don't want to. And I was telling them that. So it ain't no out here. It's no I can't out here. When you think you can't pull through three plates of sled up this hill, don't say you can't. Try it first.
Yeah.
And then you see that you're actually moving it up the hill, and I'm like, boom, just because you didn't move it as far as you thought you could, you still moved it.
Yeah.
So don't give them no slack. Don't give them no excuses to say they can't. None of that. You push them to the point that they want to be great because that's what they want. You know, but they don't. Every person, every player, always going to see what they can do. It's just like that child, children. They always going to see what they can get away with. if you push them to the point, and ain't no I can't out here, and don't give me no excuses why you think you can. So I don't want to hear it. Get up that hill and let's do another. Let's go. And I think that's going to be the one thing that I can pass on to all the coaches. Don't give them no slack. If they don't want to do what you got to do, don't lower your standards for them. Do not do that. Because when you lower those standards, then your whole program goes out the window. When you lower your standards and to try to, you know, I got a great player. I don't care if the greatest player on your team. If she's the apple, the bad apple of the bunch, get rid of her. You know, that's going to bring it down. So, you know, just... And like I said, when it comes down to training and that, just push them to the max. No, never give them no slack. And that's my, you know, that's what I did. So I was in the example.
My only follow-up question for that, coach, would be, I know you said you can never train early enough, but is there any cutoff for you as a coach as far as, you know, if you're doing a workout or doing crazy conditioning, but it's getting close to, you know, playing a game. Is there a cutoff where, you want to keep your players fresh?
During the season, I don't condition. During the season, I prepare for games.
Okay.
That's what I do. During the season, there was never no condition. And it don't make no sense to, because they're going to get enough of that during the game. I had 12 players. When there ain't no sense to a dog going to train them and condition them during the season, no. We preparing for a game. So we out here running plays. We're trying to execute the plays. We're trying to get more, you know, more smooth and more, you know, crisp and execute these plays like we need to.
Yeah.
You know, but I never conditioned during the season. Never.
Gotcha. So what was your cutoff?
My cutoff for that was, I think it was about a month out because I told them, I do it in phases. You know, the first phase is, you know, I tried to map the NFL phase, you know, helmets. The first couple of weeks, and then they helmet and shoulder pads so they can get used to running with the helmet and shoulder pads, and then the hidden drill. So it kind of phases all the way up to, like, from January, December, January time frame. You're really not going to be doing a lot because it's real cold outside.
Right.
And then I bring them back around March, February, March time. And then we know we playing in April, so I just, you know, warm up their pads a little bit, make them hit and condition a little bit. And then about 30 days out, you know, if we're just, only thing we're doing is going over, executing plays, looking at film, getting ready for stuff like that.
Gotcha. That makes sense, man. I can dig it. Well, I'm definitely going to stay in touch, Coach. I want the Arkansas Wildcats to come back with a vengeance, but I know that, you know, we can only control what we can control, so we'll see what happens. But if you're ever in Colorado, definitely hit me up. I'd love to take you to lunch, you know, buy you a meal and pick your brain more. But in the meantime, I might reach out to you with your permission periodically, you know, if I want to pick your brain a little bit with some strength and conditioning stuff, because, you know, I'm always trying to do the extra stuff for my team to make sure that they're going to be, you know, championship ready. And so, you know, I only have limited knowledge myself. So I got, you know, I got to talk to the smart guys like you to put stuff together.
No, you know, but you know, smart guys, you know, you call me a smart guy. I'm smart guy. You know, we should be willing to pass on that knowledge. Like I said, it's for to get people better.
Yeah.
You know, I even though I was the best team, you know, during the year that we, you know, went 11-0.
Yeah.
Hell, I was on the sideline most of the time, man, because the coaches weren't doing what they supposed to do with their team. I was like, come on now, this team could be a lot better. They got great talent. It could be a lot better. Because you see what they have. You know, you kind of get frustrated because you get to the point like, hell, if you're not going to do what you need to do, give them to me, and I train them.
Yeah. I'm with you, Coach. Well, yeah, man, as usual, always great to talk to you. Like I said, I'll definitely stay in touch. I'm going to post this podcast this Friday, so I'll tag you on Facebook. But we'll definitely stay in touch, man. I appreciate the time, and we'll definitely talk soon.
Roger that.
All right, man.
I appreciate you too, boss. Thank you. Thank you for the interview.
All right. Thanks, man.
All right.
I'll see you, Coach Duke.
And there you have it. Coach Ernest Dukes, head coach of the Arkansas Wildcats. Live and in color. Awesome interview. I really enjoyed talking to him. And when I told him that I was going to hit him up for advice in the future, coaching advice and specifically conditioning advice, I'm going to definitely do that. Wasn't just, you know, surface stuff. I'm definitely going to do that because that guy proved that you can literally win a football championship with 12 players, which is incredible. Like I said, it's hard to even believe that it ever happened, but I watched it with my own eyes, and so just really inspiring stuff. But anyways, that's all I got for you guys this week. Hope you guys enjoyed it. It was nice talking to you guys again. I felt bad about missing last week, but the world keeps on turning, you know what I mean? But yeah, I'll definitely talk to you guys next week, and hope you guys have a great weekend and week, and I'll talk to you soon. She